Now, the one who protects us all from prattling prognosticators and perfidious pundits.
I say, America, stay out the bushes.
Look for the union label.
And to secure these rights, governments are instituted among men, deriving their just powers from the consent of the government.
From my cold, dead hands.
I'm concerned that if we don't impeach this president, he will get reelected.
It's time for the Alan Nathan Show. Here he is, the longest-running nationally syndicated centrist host in the country, Alan Nathan.
Welcome aboard, everybody. Welcome aboard. I'm ever yours, Alan Nathan, the militant moderate. Thank you so much for joining us. If this is your virgin voyage, allow me to share with you our mantra. Folks, we want the Republicans out of our bedroom, the Democrats out of our wallets, and both out of our First and Second Amendment rights. We feel there exists this cavernous gap separating the two orthodoxies, and that it's a gap comprised of many degreed thinking people who can argue quite passionately in shades of gray. And to that end, each and every show, we have fine guests to help best illustrate this point. Today is no exception. Also, if you wish to hook up with us on the web, it's www.alannathan.com. Don't forget that email address, alan@alannathan.com. That's A-L-A-N. Coming at you live and strong each and every Monday through Friday. At this time, don't forget the classic Alan Nathan Show, Saturdays, 6 to 7 p.m. And overnight Sunday mornings, 3 to 4, all times Eastern. We are indeed a Main Street Radio Network production. Please check us out at mainstreetradionetwork.com. Feel free to avail yourselves of our nascent but always robust Twitter and Facebook options that we have there for you. And, of course, with great dispatch and alacrity, we love to thank our distributor, the Salem Radio Network. That's right, the Alan Nathan Show is entering its 27th year of national syndication, all thanks to you, reaching about 800 towns and cities across a couple of hundred radio station broadcasts each week. Again, all thanks to you. And by the way, I don't care if you're part of the authoritarian left or perpetually clueless right, please get out of the thought control business. Our topics du jour, as you may have heard, well, my oh my, an appellate court allows Trump's tariffs to continue, thus reversing a lower court's usurpation of the executive separated powers. But what happens when it reaches the Supreme Court? What about that? What does happen when that occurs? Also, the Supreme Court ruled recently, 8-0, to limit a court's authority to halt executive-supported infrastructure projects based upon supposed environmental effects on other projects outside the one in focus. So you got to wonder, will this narrowing of judicial power impact nationwide injunctions as well? Also, Rasmussen and Insider Advantage polls show Trump approval at 7 and 11, respectively. That's not bad. An approval at plus 7 and 11, respectively. But why do the pollsters, who were most accurate in the 2024 presidential election like these two, reflect much higher numbers than the rest in the community? Why is that? Assisting in the opining and analyzing, old friend of the show, Jeffrey Lord joins us, contributing editor to the American Spectator, also contributor to Newsbusters and Conservative Review. He's also a former CNN political commentator. Additionally, he was associate political director for President Ronald Reagan, also worked for Housing Secretary Jack Kemp under President George H.W. Bush. His most recent book is the highly praised work entitled Swamp Wars, Donald Trump and the New American Populism versus the Old Order. This actually came out a while ago, but still resonates quite accurately today. Good to have you back, Jeffrey. How are you?
Good to be here. I can't believe I'm saying this, but as we start to head into the summer, oh my goodness.
I can't believe Trump's been in power this long. It feels like he's only been in power for a few weeks. Now, to the Democrats, of course, they feel like he's been in power for 20 years.
I have to laugh. That is what goes on here. And, I think back, you mentioned my working for President Reagan. I think back to Reagan days, and he drove Democrats absolutely nuts. They thought, first of all, he'd never win. And then he not only wins, he wins in a landslide. Two of them at that. And, they had a hard time. And I think they are having a similarly hard time coping with President Trump.
Yeah, and this is, and please remember, each time Reagan dropped to the low 40s in each term, he dropped to this very, very low 40s in each of his two terms.
There was a, and this is fairly traditional, I will say, after his first 2 years, he got just absolutely clobbered in the congressional elections in 1982. So much so that all kinds of political prognosticators were saying, that's it, it's over. The Reagan era is done before it even begins. What they couldn't count on was that it took a while. First of all, he had to get his program passed. That took until August of 1981. And then it takes a while for these things to kick in. And it had not kicked in by the November election. But come January of 1983, it started to kick in. And by 1984, it was roaring along. And that's when he won a 49-state victory.
And that was after his poll numbers had dropped, as we stated. But again, in his second term, they dropped to like 41 or 42 shortly after the fiasco he had with the Whitewater, the Jim Tower hearings or whatever, all having to do with Iran-Contra and all that. But he bounced back, and when he left office, he did so with a 60% approval rating. That I only bring that up because people have been trying to write Trump's obituaries for quite some time, only to be disabused. Because now when you look at the polls, they're not bad. And as a matter of fact, when you look at Rasmussen, you see Trump's up by 7. When you look at Insider Advantage, you see he's up by 11. The right track, wrong track numbers are the best they've ever been. I mean, 50%, are you kidding me? I mean, I've never heard of that. I've never seen that in my entire life.
There's two ways, there's two different sets of interpretations or the way to look at poll numbers. The first is, of course, what we do all the time, which, you know, some poll just got published somewhere. Let's look at this. This is good. This is bad. This is indifferent, whatever it might be. But the other way is history. Is the long term. And my favorite example of this is good old Democrat Harry Truman. When he left the White House, his popularity, he had a 35% popularity rating. And then he left in 1953. 20 years later, almost to the day, the polls came out rating Harry Truman as one of America's greatest presidents. The turnaround was unreal. And I think and that happens with other presidents. And I think that the lesson here is the short term, you know, it's interesting to talk about. You want to pay some attention to it, particularly if you're in the White House. But in the long term, it can mean something else entirely and vanish entirely and become something else. So beware.
Oh, yeah, because people often feel differently once they're subjected to additional information. That's how come polls are often behind the learning curve, because you have to allow for the fact that once people become aware of additional facts to which they were perhaps earlier not privy, that will alter their perspective. And because the age in which we live, that realization can be accelerated much faster than was the case during Truman. You're right, Truman left with very bad numbers. I mean, I think the famous phrase was, they won't have me to kick around anymore. I mean, that's what he was. I think that's what he said. But Reagan, again, he experienced a turnaround in his own term. With Trump, he's experiencing a bit of a turnaround as we speak. I mean, he started off with decent numbers in the second term, dropped because he's been trying to put forward an aggressive agenda. But that agenda is beginning to pay off. We're seeing a lowering of grocery prices, eggs in particular. We're seeing a lowering of gas prices, a lowering of inflation. We had been seeing a lowering of mortgage rates, but now they're bouncing back up a bit. And the concern is over our spending habits. But in order to counter the deficits that we've been running, we need to generate more taxable revenue in a fashion that doesn't require us actually raising taxes on everybody, but rather having that many more people making that much more money at that many more jobs, so that that many more dollars of revenue can be pumped into the Treasury. Don't forget, when Trump's tax cuts kicked in 2017, we found that there was a definite increase in tax revenue. People were paying less per person. Even the tax policy center, the very liberal group, was quoted by the New York Times as saying, yeah, over 80% of the people were able to experience a tax cut. Because of that, we had a definite revenue increase. Unfortunately, Congress outpaced that increase with spending, resulting in yet an ever-increasing amount of our deficit spending. While I want this big, beautiful bill to pass, if you can't stick around, I want your answer as to how we can still somehow address the hemorrhaging of dollars that are increasing our national debt and our yearly deficit. You're listening to The Alan Nathan Show right here on the Main Street Radio Network. Going to be right back.
Heart disease is the leading cause of death in the U.S., but new research offers hope. A recent clinical trial shows that a once-daily anti-inflammatory medication may help reduce dangerous plaque in the arteries, offering new options for people living with heart disease. Cardiologist and program director at Harbor UCLA Medical Center, Dr. Matthew Budoff, explains how this breakthrough could change cardiovascular care.
We found that low-dose colchicine, 0.5 milligrams, can help reduce coronary plaque volume and inflammation in patients with heart disease. This may offer a new way to prevent future heart attacks or strokes by targeting a root cause, inflammation.
These findings build on prior research showing low-dose colchicine's role in lowering cardiovascular risk in high-risk patients, and it could be a vital part of your doctor's care plan.
When combined with other standard treatments, low-dose colchicine offers another tool to help patients live longer, healthier lives.
Learn more at CVDinflammation.com.
Funko's iconic pop collectibles, the vinyl figures with large signature heads inspired by pop culture characters and celebrities across film, TV, music, sports, and more, are a global sensation. Now, Funko's custom Pop Yourself line offers everyone a chance to create personalized pop replicas of themselves, friends, and loved ones. Skip the boring gifts this season and give dads and grads the gift of Pop Yourself, a personalized gift that's just as unique as they are. Graduation gowns and Father's Day accessories are just a few of the options to personalize your perfect pop. Jen Han, Funko's general manager of Pop Yourself.
Pop Yourself is more than a gift. It's a custom-made tribute. We're delighted to offer everyone the opportunity to create a personalized, thoughtful gift. So ditch the mug or gift card and give your dad or grad a fun, unforgettable keepsake.
Try Pop Yourself to commemorate special moments such as Father's Day, birthdays, baby reveals, or just about anything. To create your Pop Yourself, visit Funko.com.
What I know about courage, I learned from my adoptive mom. She said sometimes you just gotta hold on and know we'll get through this.
Mom, we are so high up. Hold my hand.
No, you hold my hand.
Here we go.
Learn about adopting a teen from foster care. You can't imagine the reward. Visit AdoptUSKids.org to find out more.
I learned patience from my adoptive dad. All he had to say was,
"Hey, you got this. Just breathe." Hey. Hey, we're pretty good.
Yeah.
Might have to start a band.
I got it.
Learn about adopting a teen from foster care. You can't imagine the reward. Visit AdoptUSKids.org to find out more. This message is brought to you by AdoptUSKids, the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, and the Ad Council.
The mission of Paralyzed Veterans of America is clear. Accessibility. Veterans who have served and sacrificed the best of themselves deserve access to the best our country has to offer. Access to meaningful employment. Access to the veterans' benefits they've earned. Accessible homes and vehicles. And access to every part of their communities. With PVA staff working inside VA hospitals, no other veterans organization has provided more real-time, ongoing support for paralyzed veterans and their families. PVA is proud to serve veterans across all branches, all generations, in all conflicts. Our nation's heroes fought for your independence. Join PVA in fighting for theirs at PVA.org.
Your thoughts on this on-again, off-again judicial tug of war over tariffs?
Well, Brett, it seems highly inappropriate for the judiciary to wade in here when the Senate had the opportunity to override the president and didn't. So, you know, in terms of separation of powers, the Senate has chosen not to exercise their powers. And the president absolutely has the right to set the trade agenda for the U.S. This administration is committed to fair trade, and we are striking the best deals for the American people. And anything that the courts do to get in the way, both harms the American people in terms of trade and in terms of tariff revenue.
Welcome back, everybody. Welcome back. Over here is Alan Nathan, the militant moderate. Once again, this is The Oasis. For those who have an aversion to the left-right, black-white, two-dimensional approach, you were listening to an exchange on Fox News' special report with Brett Baer. Brett asks Treasury Secretary Scott Bessent about the quote-unquote judicial tug-of-war over tariffs. Bessent replies that it seems inappropriate for the judicial system to attack tariffs when the Senate decided not to check them. He says the interference from the courts hurts the public. Indeed, Congress has already conferred upon the president the prerogative to apply tariffs. He's pretty much got the emergency powers to do so through Title 50. But let's hear a little clip from the views of Senator John Kennedy on this. He was on with Fox News' Ingram Angle with Laura Ingram. This is what he had to say. Clip 4, James, if you please.
I think it's pretty clear that the president has tariff authority. Congress gave it to him. Sooner or later, the Supreme Court is going to have to address this. Those who oppose the executive branch and those who oppose the legislative branch and are seeking recourse in the courts are at some point going to dig up more snakes than they can kill.
Always a wonderful, colorful way with words. Assisting me right now in the opining and analyzing, we have old friend of the show, one of our regulars sticking around, and we appreciate that. Jeffrey Lord, again, contributing editor to the American Spectator, contributed to Newsbusters and Conservative Review, also former CNN political commentator. Jeffrey Lord, now fortunately, the appellate court has given Trump the green light for these tariffs, but they were originally batted down by a lower court. Why, in your estimation, did the U.S. Court of International Trade rule that Trump's tariffs must cease because they supposedly exceeded his authority, despite Congress vesting in him that very authority in Title 50? Again, thankfully, they were overruled. But why did they do this when, as a matter of language, Congress conferred upon the president this authority via Title 50, is the International Emergency Economic Powers Act, otherwise known as IEEPA. And it very specifically says that the president can declare when he believes there exists a, quote, unusual and extraordinary threat to the national security, foreign policy, or economy of the United States that originates in whole or in substantial part outside the United States. And again, once that declaration is made, he gets to control subsequent transactions and dealings and agreements and modifications. What am I missing here, Jeffrey Lord?
Well, I don't think you're missing anything here, Alan. There's two things at play here. One of them is, strictly speaking, the law, and you can have reasonable people disagreeing on what a president's powers are or are not. But there's something else that is unspoken going on here. I am convinced of this. And it applies only to Donald Trump. And that is, there is in the establishment government, there is such a distaste and dislike for Donald Trump. Whether people are sitting, the people involved are judges, whether they're members of Congress, Democrat members of Congress, whether they're plain old-fashioned bureaucrats hidden in the bureaucracy somewhere, there is plenty of distaste for Donald Trump on a personal level, that if they've got the official ability to, you know, sort of gum up the works for him, they'll do it. And I think that that can't be ruled out.
I mentioned earlier that the Supreme Court ruled 8-0 very recently, 8-0 to limit a court's authority to halt executive-supported infrastructure projects based upon supposed environmental effects on other projects outside the one in focus. I was wondering about this earlier. Will this, in your estimation, impact nationwide injunctions? In other words, will this narrowing of judicial power potentially impact nationwide injunctions as well, your sense?
Yes, I think it will. I think it will. I mean, one of the things that I think is that we have learned, that Americans in general have learned throughout American history, is that the government of the United States, as set up by the founding fathers, is complicated. And if it was complicated when it began, 200 whatever years ago, it is infinitely more complicated now, because as I've probably said to you before, if a congressman wakes up in the morning and his five-year-old has a runny nose, he goes into his office, has his staff draw up legislation to create the Department of Children with Runny Noses.
Yeah.
It passed. They build a building that's 10 stories tall, fill it with thousands of federalized and unionized employees that are making six figures, and then they go on to the next problem. That is what the mentality is here. Literally, when you drive through Washington, and I lived there a long time and worked in it a long time, that is what goes on here. And so that complicates any president's ability to do anything. And in this particular case, the situation is dealing with tariffs. But there's nothing new about this. And frankly, sad to say, I think all this is going to do is get worse, not better.
Yeah, because these nationwide injunctions allow any one of 677 federal district judges to really usurp the separated powers of the executive. How? By way of camouflaging his or her political disagreement with these nonsensical claims of constitutional noncompliance via some pretty tortured word association bridges. And even Supreme Court Justice Elena Kagan has voiced opposition to this practice. Do we see her maintaining that position or that opposition when the High Court rules on this matter in the next few weeks? Jeffrey?
I think it's entirely possible, yeah. My observation, and I'm not a lawyer, but I've been involved in the Reagan era in getting some of these people on the bench. Judge Bork, that was a huge situation which did not pan out, which says something about what goes on in these campaigns for Supreme Court justice. But I think that they have all sorts of behind-the-scenes problems here. And in the case of Justice Kagan, I think, you know, the pressure from her colleagues to stay in the same path will be fairly intense, I think, now that she's out there.
Yeah, she's going to have a hard time flipping after having made such a cogent argument. We're going to play the clip later on in the show. She was addressing some college students in 2022, and she pointed out, and she said them by name, she said, whether it's Trump or Biden, you shouldn't be allowed to judge shop, and then when you do, we shouldn't have a single judge out of 677 be able to thwart the agenda as chosen by the electorate, also as manifested through their choice in leadership, that being the president. You just can't have any one of 677 district court judges having the right to dictate both national and international policy. You're listening to The Alan Nathan Show. Going to be right back.
May is Small Business Month, and TikTok is supporting entrepreneurs at a time when they need it most with their nationwide program, Small Biz Fest. TikTok is giving away $1 million in ad credits and one-on-one support to local businesses to help them reach new audiences and increase sales. Esme Lean, TikTok's head of small and medium business.
TikTok has become the go-to platform for business owners looking to grow their audiences and to be discovered by new customers across the nation. At TikTok, we're focused on supporting our thriving community of 7.5 million businesses. And this May, we celebrate celebrate Small Biz Fest as the next step in our year-long commitment to support and supercharge entrepreneurs.
TikTok is also launching free educational resources to help businesses launch, market, and grow on the platform. To learn more about the ad credit giveaway and how to kickstart your journey on TikTok, visit TikTokSmallBizFest.com.
Circle K Fuel Day is back. Just in time for Memorial Day weekend, customers can save up to 40 cents on each gallon of fuel at the pump from 4 p.m. to 7 p.m. local time on Thursday, May 22nd. The discount is applied directly at the pump, so customers can enjoy their savings seamlessly. Your purchase will also have an added benefit. To honor our veterans ahead of Memorial Day, 10% of profits will be donated to the Children of Fallen Patriots Foundation, helping military children who have lost a parent in the line of duty. As people hit the road over the long weekend, customers can stretch their dollars and help give back to veterans with Circle K Fuel Day. With 5,800 Circle K locations across the U.S. participating in the Fuel Day, mark your calendar to get your discount while supplies last. To find the closest local Circle K store offering this deal, visit CircleK.com/fuel-day.
Hi, it's Practical Polly's radio show. If you're just figuring out that healthier cooking oils are better than solid fats, you may be asking, now what am I going to do with all these tubs of lard? Ever had one of those moments when your favorite skinny jeans feel too tightly tailored? Generously apply lard to your hips and thighs and those fancy pants will slide on like a dream. Or here's a family-friendly idea. How about making your yard into a lard fun park? Frost your driveway with a nice thick coating and give those kiddos a downhill thrill no matter what time of year. Having a bad hair day? Yep. A little lump of lard can tame your flyaways in a jiffy. So there's no need for that lard to go to waste or to your waste. But get your best heart-healthy trade-up with healthier oils, like canola, olive, or other vegetable oils, which can actually lower your chances for heart disease. Now that's a tip worth keeping for life. Learn more at heart.org/facethefats. Canola Info is the national supporter of the American Heart Association's Face the Fats campaign.
Steven.
Who said that?
Me, down here.
What are you, a yellow booger?
I'm a banana slug, Steven.
Well, what are you doing in my room?
I'm your sense of adventure. Don't you remember me? Don't you know that we miss you?
Miss me? Who misses me?
You know, all your friends in the forest. The trees, the pond, that little fort that you made out of branches. We all miss you.
Mom took me to the forest last year.
I'm a slug, Steven. It took me a long time to get here.
Oh, I guess that makes sense.
The forest is not that far away. Have an adventure today. I'm sure your mom would take you.
You're right. I should get out. I want to have fun. Play in puddles, catch frogs, and climb trees. Hey, Mom!
Yeah, hon?
Steven! What is that in your hand?
It's my sense of adventure, Mom. It's telling me we need to get out of the house and have some fun in nature today.
Come to the forest where the more adventurous you lives. Check out discovertheforest.org for cool places nearby. Brought to you by the U.S. Forest Service and the Ad Council.
No word in the English language is less convincing than probably.
Are you sure we should get matching tattoos on our first date?
Sure. We'll probably stay together.
Probably? It's been 23 minutes since I ate. I can probably swim.
You should wait 30 minutes.
Okay, don't tell me what to do. Cannonball! Cramp! Oh, I have a cramp.
I can probably hit the green from here.
Probably.
Can I get a mulligan?
Ready to go?
Hey, are you sure you're okay to drive?
Yeah, I'm pretty sober. Yeah, I'm probably okay.
Probably okay isn't okay, especially when it comes to drinking and driving. If you're drinking, call a cab, a car, or a friend. Buzz driving is drunk driving. A message brought to you by NHTSA and Adkins.
Welcome back, everybody. Welcome back. Every year is Alan Nathan, the militant moderate, once again. This is The Oasis for those who have an aversion to the left, right, black, white, two-dimensional approach. Absolutely delighted you could be with us. Covering a number of things here today. An appellate court allows Trump's tariffs to continue, thus reversing a lower court's usurpation of the executive separated powers. But what happens when it reaches the Supreme Court? Also, the Supreme Court ruled recently, very recently, 8-0, to limit a lower court's authority to halt executive-supported infrastructure projects based on supposed environmental effects on other projects outside the one in focus. Now, will this narrowing of judicial power impact nationwide injunctions as well? Also, Rasmussen and Insider Advantage polls, also Trafalgar, when you think about it, they all show that Trump has an approval rating of plus 7 and 11, respectively. So why do pollsters who were most accurate in the 2024 presidential election seem to reflect much higher numbers than the rest of the crowd? We have assisting in the opining and analyzing one David Grasso, Vice President of Communications at the Cybersphere Group. It's a cybersecurity firm. Pardon me. He was also a journalist with Sinclair Media and was CEO of Bold TV, a nonprofit digital news platform focused on elevating diverse perspectives through bipartisan dialogue. He also hosted Follow the Profit, a nationally syndicated podcast exploring money, values, entrepreneurship. He's here to chat with us about court overruling the lower court on tariffs, as well as Rasmussen's rather eye-opening right track, wrong track poll showing 50% think the country's on the right track. That is an astonishing number. Classically, we're always saying that, you know, most of us feel that the country's on the wrong track because the right track is whatever we individually think it should be. So it's against an almost mythical, hard to surpass standard, because no matter what's going on in the country, we could all think of things that would be better. So therefore, by default, you know, we're always going to have more of a wrong track figure or a higher wrong track figure than a right track. Not this go around. Wow. This is quite a development. Anyway, David Grasso, good to have you back. How are you today?
Doing great, Alan. Let's get right into it.
Yeah, let's get into the appellate court overruling the lower court on tariffs. I found it kind of astonishing that this ever was even an issue, because the International Emergency Economic Powers Act, Title 50, is a congressional law signed by Jimmy Carter in 1977, and it does specifically authorize the president to declare when he believes there exists a, quote, unusual and extraordinary threat to the national security, foreign policy, or economy of the United States that, again, originates in whole or substantial part outside the United States. As a matter of fact, later on in Section 101, it says the president may extend the exercise of such authorities for one-year periods upon a determination of each such extension that the exercise of such authorities with respect to such country for another year is in the national interest of the United States. Now, it's a little wordy, I know, but notice that it does not say upon the judiciary's determination, but rather the president. And it was an authority conferred upon him by Congress. So what the hell was this court thinking of, this U.S. International Trade Court thinking, when they first tried to bat the guy down? Your sense of it all?
You know, the narrative is a little bit garbled with this, right? Because you could definitely make the case that China's trade practices with the United States and really the rest of the world are a threat to national security. And if the administration had rolled out targeted tariffs to protect American industries and really shore up our economy and lessen our dependence on China, I think they would have been treated better in court. The problem is that the trade war has been so wide and indiscriminate, including our essential economic partners right next door in Canada and Mexico. It's really hard to see how this is really in national security interests when it's really a lot of it is basically ideological and is going to be enormously damaging to the economy. So while the philosophical underpinnings that trade is unfair is definitely solid, the way it's been implemented in this second term of the Trump administration has been chaotic, and I'm not surprised to see the court at least cast a shadow of a doubt on expanding federal power on this front.
But then you have the appellate court overturning them and accordingly letting Trump continue his tariffs because they think otherwise. And also, please understand, the court was talking about, you know, it being a national security threat, but it's not limited to that. It includes that, but it's not limited to that. It's unusual and extraordinary threat to the national security, foreign policy, or economy of the United States. Now, as you said by your own description, there is a wideness of abuse to which we've been subjected by many countries, including those that we consider allies, those who are close to us in proxemics as well. But that doesn't mean that somehow, just because they're friends, that these imbalanced abuses are any less injurious to our economy. So how is Title 50 still not in play?
I mean, definitely China's practices are stand far
Well, not
and
just
wide.
China. Look at Vietnam. Vietnam had a 90% tariff against us. There's 184 countries, and the vast majority of them, there's 190-something on the planet, but there's 184 that were affected by Trump's reciprocal tariffs. And when you go throughout the entire list, you find that 90% of them, if not more, had unfair trade practices to which we were being subjected. Vietnam, again, 90%. Israel, for God's sakes, a very, very close ally. They were subjecting us to unfair tariffs. They've quickly turned things around. The European Union right now, executing some capacity for self-appraisal, seems to be a prime example of Trump's efficacy in strategy, because they're now coming to the table saying, Uncle, please suspend the tariffs that you announced. Give us a little time. Let us renegotiate. That's the European Union. The UN, the United Kingdom itself, not only just came to the table, it completed a deal. We have a US-UK deal that's brand new. And even China wound up coming to us saying, you know, all right, fine, let's try to hash something out. It just strikes me that on balance, if we're able to bring in all these people, even Julian Epstein, diehard Democrat, he's never going to be anything but a Democrat, he's acknowledged that Trump is onto something here. He's the former chief counsel for the House Judiciary Committee, Julian Epstein is. I mean, and a number of Democrats have also come around as well in this regard. It seems to me that aren't we being short-sighted by only looking at some of the discomfort that's associated with all growing pains in the direction of a better state of being? Your sense.
Well, of course Democrats are cozying up to this. This is basically a Democratic playbook. This seems like something more that President Bernie Sanders would do instead of a Republican president. Additionally, this lawsuit that originally, you know, started this whole legal process was sponsored by right-wing people. It's a conservative libertarian think tank. I think philosophically, all Americans are with exactly what you said. Trade is profoundly unfair and needs to be changed. Renegotiating things, great idea. Trump is definitely onto something. Again, the implementation
But the leverage he uses is what's making it happen. But for the leverage he applied that so many supposed free traders bemoan, forgetting that free trade doesn't exist unless both sides of the bargain are practicing that. But it appears that people are forgetting that, but for Trump's application of this leverage that got so many people nervous, these folks never would have come to the bargaining table. I mean, why haven't we seen them come to the bargaining table for decades now? And by the way, you mentioned that the initial opponents to this were all conservatives and libertarians, but also bringing suit against the president over his tariffs were a whole lot of blue states. Okay, Colorado, Connecticut, Delaware, Illinois, Maine, Minnesota, Nevada, New Mexico, New York, Vermont. Bernie Sanders, you said, would be on the side of this. His state is against it. Why the disconnect?
Yes, I understand, Alan, but the chaos that this is showing, go look at the CEO confidence index rating. It's dropped by almost half since January. There are definite costs to this. Everyone wants a fairer trade system, but at the same time, paying $4,000 extra per year per American household is an enormous political liability to the
Trump. But that presupposes that nothing changes. That's taken a peripheral observation, inferring it as if it were a conclusive analysis, and then accordingly projecting it as such. I mean, UK came in and made the deal. Vietnam is dropping its tariffs. If all these countries continue following suit and we take advantage of the leverage we have while we have it, then all those references you just cited will accordingly change, because, as you know, people who invest are speculative and they hate uncertainty. They would prefer bad certainty than potentially great things to happen attached to uncertainty while that uncertainty is still there. But wouldn't you agree with me that if Trump pulls this off, as Julian Epstein thinks he just might, then that change in the topography will alter the gloom and doom projections that you just cited, or am I mistaken?
I guess it's grotesque hypocrisy coming from the boomers who grew up, you know, with free trade and got to experience low interest rates, free trade, everything. And now you're throwing all of this on my generation as we're coming of age. I can't buy a home. I can't renovate my home. All of that is predicated on free trade.
Which presupposes that these things don't work. Which presupposes these things don't work.
A new national survey reveals a surprising gap between what Americans believe about dental care and what they actually do. Many say they want to keep their natural teeth for life, but their habits often don't match that goal. Dr. Stephen Katz, president of the American Association of Endodontists, explains.
Most adults say they care about keeping their natural teeth, and nearly 9 in 10 believe flossing is important. But almost 60% don't floss daily, and more than 2 in 5 wait to see a dentist until they're already in pain. These delays can lead to serious dental problems.
Tooth pain doesn't have to mean tooth loss. When problems do arise, there's hope and help from a dental specialist known as an endodontist to help save your natural teeth.
That's correct. Endodontists are specialists in saving natural teeth through root canal therapy. With the right care, even a tooth that hurts or is infected can frequently be saved. But the key is acting early. Don't wait for pain.
Learn more at findmyendodontist.com. A new AARP fraud report highlights the need for better cybersecurity habits. Kathy Stokes is the director of fraud prevention programs with AARP's Fraud Watch Network.
Fraud is becoming increasingly sophisticated, yet many Americans may still be unaware of habits that can decrease their risk. Now, millions of adults have downloaded unverified apps, or they've taken social media quizzes from questionable sources, and millions have yet to enable multi-factor authentication, which is an easy step that offers additional protection for online accounts.
The good news is that protecting yourself doesn't require a tech background.
Simple steps like updating your passwords, using a VPN on public Wi-Fi, and turning on security features can help keep your information safe.
For more on how to protect yourself from the latest scams, visit AARP.org/Fraud Watch Network. That's AARP.org/Fraud Watch Network.
Life is expensive for the average American right now. Budgets are tight and customers are looking for ways to stretch their dollars. That's why Metro by T-Mobile is bringing back the classic $40 plan. Get a new 5G phone and a plan for just $40 flat. For a family of four, it's just $25 a line, and each person gets a free 5G phone. That's $350 in savings. When you join any new plan from Metro, the price of talk, text, and data is guaranteed for the next 5 years. Take that, inflation. For more information, visit metrobyt-mobile.com. Sponsored by T-Mobile.
The journey of 1,000 miles begins with the first step. At Children International, we know that the journey to end poverty for good begins first with a child. It starts with their first checkup, lesson, opportunity, job. That journey takes commitment from people like you and me to end poverty for good. Learn more at children.org.
You know that feeling? Like every door is closing and you just can't see a way out? Being unemployed, underemployed, or just out of school feels a lot like that. But when you find the right tools, suddenly everything just clicks. Getting on that path may be easier than you think. A good place to start? Go to findsomethingnew.org. At findsomethingnew.org, you have access to resources that help develop new skills. Skills that will position you for careers in today's growing industries. From healthcare and manufacturing to cybersecurity and alternative energy. Plus, you can take advantage of online courses, certification programs, apprenticeships, and more. So you can take yourself from unemployed and uncertain to empowered and prepared for what's next. Find your path to a new career today. Visit findsomethingnew.org. A message from the Ad Council.
I'm Ben Affleck, and I want to thank you for joining me and supporting Paralyzed Veterans of America. Our vets need you.
I'm a quadriplegic. I'm definitely at risk with my diminished lung capacity.
I have MS. I'm in a wheelchair, and I can't leave the house because I have a compromised immune system.
I'm very concerned about, would there be a bed for me? Would there be a ventilator for me? Would I be able to survive something?
It's just heavy. You know, it's a heavy moment.
This is a war. This really is.
Our veterans fought for us. Let's fight for them.
I am so grateful for the PVA. They're making sure that we have all of the food and supplies that we need right now.
We all got to help each other right now. We can't get through this by ourselves.
It's with profound gratitude that you're going to be saving our lives.
To find out how you can help, please go to helppva.org. That's helppva.org.
Welcome back, everybody. Welcome back. Every year is Alan Nathan, the militant moderate. Once again, this is The Oasis for those who have an aversion to the left, right, black, white, two-dimensional approach. Absolutely delighted you could be with us. We're covering a number of things. Obviously, we're focusing on tariffs as well. We have to. We had a lower court put the kibosh on Trump's tariffs. Then we had an appellate court that says he can continue. So what we find ourselves is looking at the overall advisability of tariffs and if they bring more harm than they do benefit. My guest is of the view that the benefits are far outweighed by the shortcomings. And I'm delighted to have him stick around so we can discuss this to some greater extent. We have assisting in the opining and analyzing old friend of the show, David Grasso, Vice President of Communications at the Cybersphere Group, which is a cybersecurity firm. He was also a journalist with Sinclair Media and was CEO of Bold TV, a nonprofit digital news platform focused on elevating diverse perspectives through bipartisan dialogue. He also hosted Follow the Profit, a nationally syndicated podcast exploring money, values, and entrepreneurship. He, like yours truly, is big time capitalist, big free trader, but we are having a friendly disagreement over the advisability of Trump's tariff approach. David, appreciate you sticking around. Thanks so much.
Always a pleasure.
Trump imposed these reciprocal tariffs on like 184 countries with percentages that either mirrored what they had been charging us or remained less despite the increases. He called it, as you know, Liberation Day. And it really shook the world into, I think, an overdue wake-up call. And so loud was the alarm clock at the time that Treasury Secretary Scott Bessent announced that about 75 of these countries notified the White House, saying they're ready to negotiate changes, including zero tariffs and zero duties. That, of course, led to Trump putting a 90-day pause on most to allow negotiations to materialize into agreements. If we hypothetically secure most of these agreements and we change the terrain for the better and we're no longer operating a deficit and we actually have a return of manufacturing as opposed to the constant hemorrhaging of manufacturing that we've had for decades, won't that perhaps make some of the pain that we're now enduring worthwhile? Your take.
Manufacturing's been on the upswing recently, and we have an economy that's already running almost at full throttle. Hence, we've had trouble with inflation lately. We need to be choosy about what type of manufacturing we reshore. Specifically, we already have energy problems because of the data centers and the growth of artificial intelligence in the country. So just this blanket bringing back all manufacturing is not a smart economic policy. We want targeted manufacturing of certain critical things that are very important for future economic growth, job growth, and national security. This whole idea of reshoring everything, you're going to be greatly disappointed with the anemic job growth that's going to come from it and really just the dislocation of investment capital into non-productive industries.
But if we have that many more countries setting up shop in the States and they need personnel to operate these companies, how does this not conflict with your portrayal?
I mean, this is the problem with the president and a lot of the people in power is they have the philosophy correct. Trade is unfair. I don't think anyone's against reciprocal tariffs as a tool to bring people to the negotiation table. But if you're expecting that to suddenly create a manufacturing boom in the United States, specifically a job boom, you're far mistaken. If things do come back, they're going to be heavily mechanized and they're going to be very, very, very high energy consumers. And this isn't the economy of your dad anymore. This is today's low labor economy. The only reason things have moved abroad is because of labor prices here, and that reality has not changed. Labor prices, regulations, et cetera. So even if they come flying back, don't expect a bunch of jobs.
even if we have modernization to the level you say, and, you know, we have tons of robots coming in and doing tasks that were originally performed by humans, the bottom line is there will have to be additional personnel to oversee this admittedly increased mechanized environment that we'll find ourselves. Those will be additional jobs at all. And also, the manufacturing of cars always requires people, no matter how mechanized it became. I mean, once Ford created the assembly line, all of a sudden we needed fewer people. But we've been needing people to assemble cars for a long time. And also, when looking at inflation, as you described it, inflation, as you know, that's the type of thing that happens when you have more currency in circulation than you have an economy that can justify it, or when you have too many dollars chasing too few goods and services. And despite all the concerns about inflation, we've seen a drop in inflation under Trump, have we not?
Yes, of course, but these policies will lead to higher inflation and higher than normal interest rates. Specifically, what happens is you have an economy that's already running close to 100%. This summer, we'll have brownouts because our grid is already stressed serving today's needs. So we can't bring back all manufacturing. It's not logistically possible. And specifically, we would want to use any excess capacity to bring in critical industries. There's a big difference between manufacturing critical chips that are only made in Taiwan right now versus manufacturing textiles and pencils. And I think that nuance is lost in this conversation when we talk about these issues.
Yeah, but capitalism is just all-encompassing. Capitalism is the beautiful thing of it all, and you and I agree on capitalism. Capitalism is the creating, selling, and buying of goods and services for the purposes of providing for wants and needs. If I do something well and it resonates, I'm self-sufficient. If I do it so well that I need help, well, that manifests itself into expanded employment, which allows there to be that many more people making that many more dollars and therefore having to pay that much more into our treasury to support all these social safety net programs we want to maintain. It seems to me that regardless of the kind of business that is brought to this country, whether it's a high tech or low tech, if it generates a profit because there's enough of a market, then by default, people will have to be hired to support the generation of said product. What am I missing?
And it doesn't really work like, I mean, what you're saying is correct, but the economics of a pencil or a textile factory are never going to work in the United States, even with the highest tariffs since the 1920s. It's just never going to happen. Where it's going to settle is, yes, a lot of the higher value added stuff will come back because it makes economic sense. But what will happen for the lower value added stuff, it will just be more expensive. And that's why tariffs are a tax on you and me. And tariffs will increase the prices of everyday essentials, especially for low and middle income Americans. And it's a huge problem. And really, even if you think this is all a good idea, it's going to become a huge political liability when you go to Ross or Marshall's or the outlets and everything is across the board 25% more. Because even if what you're saying is true, this is a legacy project for the Trump administration.
It just seems to me that as we started shipping jobs overseas in exchange for having lower costing goods here, we wound up depleting the number of better paying jobs in exchange for the lower costing goods. And at one point or another, the law of diminishing returns will take over. I like the idea of bringing additional commerce of all kinds, those with a greater profit ratio and those with less, as long as there's a profit.
The opinions you hear on the Main Street Radio Network are those of the host, callers, and guests, and not necessarily those of the station, Main Street Radio Network, its management, or advertisers. The information on the Main Street Radio Network does not constitute a recommendation, offer, or solicitation to buy or sell any product or securities. So please, consult a professional before investing. If you have any questions or comments about Main Street Radio Network, contact us at 703-719-0433 or at our website, Main Street Radio Network.com.